Today, market calisthenics as investors buy dips, rotate, and speculate. Hello again, it's Martin Norton from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. This is our weekly market update where we start in the US, cross to Europe and Asia, and end in Australia, covering commodities and crypto along the way. Markets got a real workout this week with some of the biggest falls, followed by some strong buying in the final session in New York, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average resetting its record high at 50,155.67 points. The S&P 500 climbed 1.97% to end the session at 6,932.3 points, and 9 of the 11 S&P 500 sector indices rose, led by information technology up 4.1%, followed by a 2.84% gain in industrials. The S&P 500 energy sector index hit a record high, along with industrials and consumer staples. The S&P 500 was less than 1% below its record closing high set last week. The Nasdaq gained 2.18% to 23,031.21 points and was down 4% from its record high last October. For the week, the Dow added 2.5%, the S&P 500 lost 0.1%, and the Nasdaq slid 1.9%. The global MSCI index rose 1.52% on Friday to be down just 0.14% for the week, while the All Countries Asia excluding Japan rose 2.64%. The European Stock 600 was up 1% for the week, and the ASX 200 plunged 2%, with all of its 11 sectors lower by nearly $65 billion worth wiped out. That was the biggest fall since a 4.2% drop back in April the 7th, 2025. For the week, the benchmark fell 1.8%. Gold moved back towards the $5,000 mark. Silver recouped $77 an ounce, and Brent oil was just shy of $68 a barrel. But Bitcoin, which plunged earlier in the week, did manage to flirt above $70,000, although it was last down there at $68,135. Note too that Singapore traded iron ore ended the week at $99 a ton. That's the fourth consecutive week of losses as inventory builds at major Chinese ports and steel mills ahead of the Lunar New Year break later in the month. Chinese port stockpiles have risen for 10 weeks and are nearing a record high. AI-related stocks drove the momentum on Friday, with Nvidia 7.9% higher, boosting its market capitalization by around $325 billion. Broadcom gained 7.1% too, while the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index leapt 5.7%. In an interview on CNBC, Nvidia boss Jensen Huang said demand for AI is sky high and that the spending plans of the megacap techs are appropriate and sustainable. He said AI is driving a once-in-a-generation infrastructure build-out. Artificial intelligence is going to be fundamentally changing how we compute everything. Amazon, along with Alphabet, Meta Platforms, and Microsoft are all set to spend, well, in total, around $650 billion for AI tools this calendar year. That's roughly 6% more than in 2025. Now, of course, the US economy will get a big boost from so much CapEx, although some of this spending might be delayed into next year if the data center projects are constrained by power and semiconductor availability. However, investors are very selective. Amazon initially slumped more than 8% after saying that it had a 2026 CapEx budget of $200 billion. It pared its early losses to around 5.6% at the close. Later in the week, several software companies were hit by concerns that AI could create more competition and hurt their margins, while investors have also fretted about elevated valuations following years of steep gains in AI-related stocks. The sell-off pushed software stocks into an extreme oversold position. So a near-term bounce hasn't been that surprising. But the question is, how durable is this? The S&P 500 Software and Services Index added 2.4% and ended seven straight sessions of losses, though its weekly drop of around 8% was its poorest week performance since March 2020. Atlassian also failed to catch Friday's rally. It fell 3.8%, extending its five-day losses to 19.6%. It's now shed almost half of its market value in the last 6 months. In contrast, Iron recouped 5.1%, narrowing its five-day losses to 20.1%. Caterpillar, which rose 7.1% to $726.20, did give the Dow its biggest boost on Friday, actually, and has helped drive the indices recent advance. Among the biggest weights in the Dow, Caterpillar was up about 27% for the year so far, and the stock gained more than 50% in 2025. Also upping the Dow on Friday were shares at Goldman Sachs, which rose 4.3%, and of course the AI leader Nvidia. Nvidia, which gained 7.9% on Friday after recent losses, is still down 0.6% for the year to date, but it replaced Intel's shares with the bellwether in November 2024, and that replacement helped the index gain greater exposure to Wall Street's AI darling. City Strategist argue that investors need to be on alert. Our base case envisions near-trend global growth, subdued global inflation, and further central bank rate cuts, the Goldilocks zone. Even so, near-term risks remain elevated, including the potential for a sharp retrenchment in AI valuations and investment, as well as a ratcheting up of geopolitical tensions. Now, we should note that the Dow outperformed the S&P 500 and the Nasdaq this week, reflecting a recent diversification by investors away from tech stocks that have led Wall Street in recent years and towards companies that have missed out on those big gains, reflecting the same trend. The Russell 2000 index of small cap companies also rallied this week. The volatility index, the fear gauge, dropped for the first time in 3 days. Over half of the S&P 500 companies have reported their quarterly earnings, and roughly 80% topped analysts' expectations, well above the typical beat rate of around 67%. The US Treasury yield curve is near the steepest level in more than 4 years due to a combination of interest rate cuts and concerns over persistent inflation and the fiscal deficit. The 10-year was at 4.205, while the 2-year was at 3.498. This steepening is indeed one to watch. Concerns over the US economy also remained in play. Challenger job cut data showed layoffs in January hit their highest level since the 2009 financial crisis, and weekly job claimed data also read higher than expected, while job openings data for December missed expectations. On Friday, the University of Michigan consumer sentiment hit a six-month high of 57.3, while one-year inflation expectations fell to a 30-month low of 3.5%. That's the lowest since January 2025. The official jobs report, originally scheduled for release on Friday, will now be released next week due to the now-resolved federal government shutdown. An abrupt shift in the Federal Reserve's role in financial markets under a potential Kevin Warsh chairmanship is unlikely, according to Morgan Stanley. While the nomination has refocused attention on the central bank's balance sheet and communication strategy, a meaningful change would take time and face significant structural constraints, they said in the note. Walsh has long criticized what he sees as an excessively large Fed footprint, pointing not only to the size of its asset holdings, but also to blurred lines between monetary and fiscal policy and an increasingly heavy communications framework that drives market behavior. Still, Morgan Stanley does not expect the nomination to materially alter the Fed's near-term interest rate reaction function. Looking ahead, the bank says there is now a higher bar for future quantitative easing and unconventional policy tools. Investors stay tuned, they stressed. Oil prices ticked up on Friday after reports that the Iranian foreign minister said productive talks had been held with the US and Oman, and that further talks would follow. Still, oil prices did have their first weekly drop in nearly 2 months, although Brent futures ticked up 0.5% to $68.10 a barrel, and US West Texas Intermediate rose 0.2% to $63.55 a barrel on Friday. Both contracts were lower across the week, with the heightened military tensions in the Middle East in the background. Markets are hoping that talks between Tehran and Washington will help descale some tensions and prevent a broader war, a notion that saw traders take some risk premium out of crude this week. The dollar slipped from two-week highs on Friday, returning some safe haven gains as risk assets rebounded from a deep rout driven by concerns over a surge in error-rated spending this year. Meanwhile, the yen is headed for its worst week against the dollar since October, wiping out most of January's hefty gains as traders await Sunday's national election. The dollar index, which tracks the performance of the US currency against six others, was down 0.34% after hitting a two-week peak earlier. It's still up 0.5% for the week, its largest weekly rise since early January. The yen was at 157.24 per dollar ahead of Sunday's vote, where a victory for the prime minister could be on the cards. Japan's 10-year bond eased just a little. The euro rose 0.37% to 1.1815 after the European Central Bank left interest rates unchanged, as expected on Thursday, and played down the effect of currency fluctuations on its future decisions. Sterling recouped some of Thursday's near 1% slide and rose 0.65% to 1.3612, but it's still its worst weekly drop against the greenback since October the 27th. The Bank of England kept rates on hold on Thursday as an unexpectedly narrow vote actually begged a few questions. They said borrowing costs are likely to fall if an expected drop soon in inflation is sustained. We will see. European stocks closed high on Friday, with more corporate earnings in the spotlight as a busy week, which included key central bank meetings, drew to a close. The Stoxx 600 closed 0.9% higher. The DAX index in Germany gained 0.9%. The CAC 40 in France climbed 0.4%. And the FTSE in the UK rose 0.6%. The quarterly earnings season has been in the spotlight this week, with results from a number of Europe's largest companies driving sentiment. Stellantis stock slumped after the auto giant said that it will take roughly 22.2 billion euros in charges as it pivots away from electric vehicles amid soft demand. The Jeep maker said some of the write-downs stem from changes in its product roadmap, reflecting sharper low assumptions for EV sales. Société Générale raised its profitability target for this year, projecting higher revenue and lower costs after the French lender reported a stronger net profit for the fourth quarter, and also in focus, weight loss drug maker Novo Nordisk gained after the US Food and Drug Administration threatened action on illegal copycat drugs. While mining giants Rio Tinto and Glencore confirmed late on Thursday that they had abandoned talks over a potential mega merger, which would have created the biggest mining company in the world. Away from the corporate sector, data released earlier in the session showed that the German exports rose more than expected in December, but industrial output fell during the same period, highlighting continued uncertainty over recovery in Europe's biggest economy. German exports rose by 4% in the previous month in December, surpassing a 1% forecast. By contrast, German industrial production fell more than expected in December by 1.9% compared with the previous month. And elsewhere, British house prices rose 0.7% in January, leaving them 1% higher than a year earlier, according to figures from mortgage lender Halifax. The Bank of England on Thursday voted 5-4 to hold rates, adopting a more dovish tone that has prompted expectations to shift towards a potential March rate cut, although consensus still points to the second quarter. Markets are struggling to fully price in two 25 basis point cuts this year, partially due to political risk, including concerns over Prime Minister Keir Starmer's leadership. ING expects the pound to face pressure, with the euro pound supported around the 0.867 to 0.868 and a bias towards 0.88 over the next month. Asian stocks mostly declined on Friday amid sustained losses in tech shares, with South Korea's KOSPI down 1.7% and Hong Kong's Hang Seng down 1.3%. India's Nifty 50 rose 0.2% as the Reserve Bank of India left interest rates unchanged. Actually, they also disclosed that India is not selling its US Treasury holdings, according to the Bank of India governor, who said in a post-policy press conference on Friday, our forex reserves have come down, so as a result of that, all holdings change. These are fluctuations on our day-to-day or week-to-week basis that we give out, but there is no reduction in our holdings of US Treasuries. Mainland Chinese shares were steady, with the Shanghai Shenzhen CSI 300 and Shanghai Composite Indices moving in a very tight range. Japan's Nikkei 225 and Topic Indices rose around 0.7% apiece, with the focus turning squarely to that national election on Sunday. A supermajority of 310 seats in the 465-seat House could give the Prime Minister enough clout to override the upper house, opening up an easier path for more fiscal spending and budget overhauls. The Prime Minister has vowed to dole out more fiscal support and tax breaks to help households cope with the rising cost of living. While stock markets had welcomed the prospect of more stimulus, concerns over an already stretched government debt level has sparked a rout in Japanese bond markets. The Australian share market on Friday fell the most since US President Donald Trump's Liberation Day tariffs in April, as sliding commodity prices, concerns over AI, and a dive in Bitcoin triggered broad equity de-risking. The ASX 200 plunged 2% to 8,908.90, with all 11 sectors lower in a nearly $65 billion wipeout. That was the biggest since a 4.2% drop on April 7, 2025. For the week, the benchmark fell 1.8%, but it may well bounce on Monday. On the ASX, technology dived 12.6% for the week, with WiseTech Global down 4.7% to $47.60, NextDC 3.9% lower to $12.71, and Technology One 5% lower to $21.86. Concerns about AI weighed on uranium stocks again as fears continued that the technology might not spark a boom in nuclear power. Deep Yellow dived 12% to $2.20 and Platinum 10.9% to $11.01. The volatility weighed on miners with BHP down 3.1% to $48.79, South 32 down 4.1% to $4.41, and Newmont down 4.9% to $154.80. Rio Tinto was flat at 157.08 after it ended talks on a potential merger with Glencore. Real estate stocks slumped as well, led by a 6.1-cent drop in Goodman Group to $28.99 and a 2.5% drop in Centre to $3.88. REA Group dropped 7.8% to $168.10 after its first half results missed market expectations as it forecast softening in the listings of homes in Australia. Aggregator Web Travel dived 29.5% to $2.96 on news that its Spanish subsidiary would be audited by that nation's tax authority. And News Corp fell 5.4% to $38.32 as growth at Dow Jones and its digital real estate businesses offset weaker conditions in its Australian news division over the December quarter. Neuren Pharmaceuticals slid 5.2% to $12.52. Reserve Bank of Australia Governor Michelle Bullock presented a hawkish stance on policy. Speaking before lawmakers on Friday, Bullock warned that stronger than expected domestic demand and tighter capacity were likely to continue underpinning inflation. Speaking just days after the ABA hiked rates for the first time in 2 years, Bullock said that the central bank needed to further dampen domestic demand to tame inflation. Her comments were viewed as broadly hawkish, sparking increased losses in local stocks as markets fretted over more potential hikes by the central bank. Markets were seen pricing at least one more hike this year, and she highlighted that government spending is part of total spending and total aggregate demand in the economy. So it, along with private spending, contributes to aggregate demand. And so to the extent that aggregate demand is above aggregate supply, which we think it is, that's contributing to inflation. That's why we've decided to raise interest rates. Chalmers would not be amused. Or as Warren Hogan put it another way, government's contribution to the economy should be reasonably steady. In times of an economic slowdown, that contribution will increase naturally, and there is even a case for some extra, albeit temporary, spending to keep things on an even keel. But when the private economy starts to recover, then government must get out of the way. Chalmers, please note. The Aussie was at 70.15 US cents and 51.53 UK pence, and the 2-year Treasury was at 4.269, while the 10-year was at 4.855. Finally, in crypto, Bitcoin climbed back above 70,000 US briefly on Friday after sinking to a 16-month low earlier. It hit 60,017. That's the lowest level since October the 24th. That was just before Bitcoin's rally accelerated as Donald Trump closed in on winning the US presidential election, having signaled his intention to support crypto on the campaign trail. Bitcoin posted its largest one-day gain since March 2023, but was down roughly 8% this week, and it was last at 68,094. Digital currency market has struggled for months since the record crash last October sent Bitcoin tumbling from an all-time peak, and investor sentiment towards those assets cooled. The options markets showed that investors are anticipating further losses on Bitcoin as demand for downside protection increased. Data showed a significant buildup of put open interest in Bitcoin or expectations that the price will fall further. Traders focused on the 60,000 to 50,000 strikes for the February 27th expiry. Those bets suggest that investors are wagering that Bitcoin will end up near those levels by that date. But the truth is, the finite supply of true Bitcoins has been swamped by the growth in derivatives, allowing traders to speculate without holding the coins themselves. Actually, many do not yet understand the significance of this shift. Bitcoin is not the pure play that it might have been once. And Ether was down about 12% at 2011 US, having similarly slid close to a 10-month low of 1,753.98 earlier in the session. On the week, however, it was still down more than 9%. All up, the global crypto market has lost some $2 trillion in value since hitting a peak of $4.379 trillion back in October, even with Friday's bounce back, with more than $1 trillion wiped out over the past month alone. Sentiment towards crypto has been affected by the latest sell-off in precious metals and stocks, and gold and silver, for instance, have caught the market's attention due to their extreme volatility, a result of leveraged buying and speculative flows. On Friday, both metals did regain their footing. As to why, well, some noted that the 10K jump in Bitcoin came as six different major crypto players purchased almost 70,000 full Bitcoins all at once. So some are saying it's completely manipulated, no longer decentralized, and we're not getting new holders. Others claim Bitcoin exactly has now entered the final bull trap of 2026. It's an exact repeat of the 2021 cycle. And Bitcoin, they say, will dump to 36,000 in March. Well, no one perhaps is going to be prepared for that, but watch and wait, because who knows? But again, let me underscore, this is contaminated now with all the derivatives and speculation, and I believe that the speculation will continue to drive the price lower. Now, in passing, we should note that China has declared a full-scale crackdown on cryptocurrencies, including no legal recognition of crypto as money, and that any crypto-related businesses should be associated with financial crime, and potentially a complete ban on foreign crypto services operating inside China. So the days of the pure play crypto are past, and the question is what comes next. Ahead, we're going to get into the Australian reporting season with Commonwealth Bank on Wednesday, ANZ, AMP and IAG on Thursday, and Westpac and GQG Partners on Friday next week. In addition, there's AGL Energy, CSL, Evolution Mining and James Hardie on Wednesday. On Thursday, there's the ASX, Computershare, Origin Energy, Breville Group, IAG, ProMedicus, South32 and Temple & Webster. On Friday, Cochlear and Nick Scali are scheduled. And on the data front, December household spending data is scheduled on Monday, consumer confidence on Tuesday and lending indicators on Wednesday. NAB's business survey will also be released on Tuesday. And the RBA Deputy Governor, Andrew Hawser, will participate in a fireside chat at the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry. And Sarah Hunter is going to be speaking on Thursday on full employment and the labour market at a CEDA event. And next week, there'll be two US economic reports scheduled, the delayed non-farm payrolls and December retail sales. Oh, and bond traders await the auction of around $125 billion of US government debt next week, $58 billion of 3-year notes on February the 10th, $42 billion of 10-year notes on February the 11th, and $25 billion of 30-year bonds on February the 12th. Watch to see what happens to interest rates on treasuries then. Oh, and China is scheduled to release January CPI on Wednesday. So standing back, yes, the complexity will continue, the volatility will continue. Expect more ups and more downs. And the question is, how many people are market fit for this? Well, I guess we'll find out in the weeks ahead. But there are big questions under the hood that need to be asked and answered. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Mia, thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.